This is Transforming Sport. I'm Sean Heath. This week, I'm speaking with Jennifer Ammon, a rising force in the academic and not-for-profit worlds connecting football and climate change. She is currently working with the not-for-profit community interest company Spirit of Football on the Ball Project 2022. She also works for the not-for-profit group Pledge Ball, where she is a research and development consultant. In addition, Jenny has worked as a research assistant at the Sport and Leisure Cultures Research Group at the University of Brighton. Today, we will be speaking about her work in the field of climate change and football broadly, but also about a forthcoming article she has written on mobilizing football fans for climate change. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Okay, well, Jennifer Ammon, thank you for coming on to the Transforming Sport podcast today. It's a real pleasure to have you on here.
Yeah, thanks for the invite.
Yeah. So I'd like to start off today just asking a little bit about your own sporting background before we sort of start getting into the nitty gritty of your research and some of your forthcoming publications.
Absolutely. That's already a question, right?
Yeah.
I do think I tried all different kinds of sport when I was younger. I mean, not that I'm that old now, but I tried all different sorts of things. Like I even played football for a short period of time. I went into swimming. I started team sports, dancing and whatnot. But then back in, I think, 2010, I started participating in Zumba classes. And then, I was also asked to become a Zumba instructor, I think, 10 years ago in 2012, and have been teaching Zumba classes, ever since. And also, okay. I think, almost 5 years ago, I also became a Strong Nation instructor as well. So, I guess that's what I do now, a bit of jogging from time to time. And I'm also a huge Werder Bremen fan since 2005, 2006, something around that.
Okay. Is that your local football club, I guess?
No, it's not.
No?
No, it's a club in the north part of Germany, but I'm originally from the south part of Germany. But I think when I started to become interested into football, it was just looking for a cool team. And then, I don't know, Bayern München was always a no-go for me. And the other teams in the south, I think they weren't even part of the first league. So my uncle married a very friendly woman from Bremen, and we visited them quite a lot. The city was nice. The people were friendly, and the club was quite successful back in the days. So that's just how it came about. And I'm still very, very happy with my choice.
Oh, fantastic.
even though they just got relegated last season, but still happy. Still.
Fantastic. I've got a good friend in Playman. So maybe when we're both over there sometime, we can go to a match together. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
So
I'm waiting to go back. It's just a question of time.
So it sounds like you've had like a really well-rounded and broad experience of sport and physical activity, before sort of moving into academia. What got you involved in the current track of sort of sport research or being interested in sport from an academic and sort of an activist perspective? Maybe start with the academic.
Trying. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think studying or doing a bachelor's in political science and a master's in global studies, it's not really the most obvious thing to go into sports then. But I always had kind of a focus on, I would say, development studies and peace and conflict studies, and just thought that, the usual attempts to try to solve those issues, they don't necessarily work that well. And then I started, or like I got across the sport for development type of thing, also in academia, and just thought, okay, that's really cool. And I don't necessarily have to be, the sports person outside of academia. And then in academia, just completely forget about it. But I can actually combine those passions, like, I don't know, trying to bring about a positive social change through sports. And I think that's just how I started looking into, all the initiatives that also, for example, football clubs have out there, and started combining those two things and looking into what sport can actually do to drive social change and eventually even stop conflict, or not stop conflicts, but at least bring people together that usually wouldn't stand next to each other probably for a football match or for whatever kind of sporting activity it is. And
right, that's something that I think a mutual colleague of ours, Jenny Orr, and others on the podcast who work on social justice issues, climate change, they're, you know, a little wary of the doom and gloom message that a lot of other disciplines have, or thematic subjects have, when it comes to, you know, looking at looking at social justice, looking at things like climate change, and sport really seems to offer a lot of opportunity to both tie in our own passions, but as well as, do good in the world in a meaningful way that isn't always doom and gloom.
Absolutely agree.
Great. So yeah, it's a really interesting background. And I think that marries really well with a lot of the work that I think we do here at Brighton in the Sport for Development and International Development program. I get a lot of people from political science, a lot of people from other different international development backgrounds. Finding sport and finding it interesting. Yeah. So how is some of your international development work now within sport? How has that evolved? You know, what are you doing? Where are you? And within your sort of sport and international development work.
I mean, I think I changed the focus quite, not early on, but when I did my master's, it was still a bit more interested in this applying a critical perspective on sport for development. But then I was lucky enough to meet a research fellow from Brighton University, Mark Deutsch, who then got me interested again, because I've been looking into that before, but into football and climate change. Like basically linking research on football fandom to the research on climate change communication, so to speak. So I think back in 2018 it was when I did a research internship where for the first time, like those two interests, tackling climate change, but also using football to do that, merged when I was looking into German professional football club societal commitment with a particular focus on their ecological efforts. I think back in 2018, there wasn't that much talk about it. And to me, it still seems, compared to the UK context, that in Germany, that there's not that much going on, or at least media coverage is not that, that much there yet. Like, for example, in the UK, I think The Guardian or BBC have already started writing about it, putting a bit of pressure on stakeholders in the field. But so that's the first time, right, I was looking more into football and climate change. But then during my master's, the topic was less present. I mean, as I said, I was thinking about potentially doing an internship, but also, dedicating my master's thesis more to sport for development, using it in that kind of context. But then I came across Mark Deutsch, and he got approached by two people independent of each other who wanted him to look into football fans and climate change. And he just shared that idea with me, and I was like, absolutely, let's do it. And again, I found a way of combining two of my passions. I mean, studying political science or global studies, climate change obviously always played a major role, but then, right, also having the chance to, I don't know, again, use football, something I'm also passionate about, to tackle that issue eventually, was just something that I found very interesting. And it all, I think, started from there. Then I dedicated my master's thesis to that topic. And we've also have a journal article and book chapter coming soon, hopefully, so soon to be published on that. And I did a quick trip into different direction, looking into using football to foster social cohesion among European citizens. Worked as a research associate for a couple of months, but now I'm back working on that topic of football and climate change with an organization. So more applying this research that I did and continue to do into practice, which is pretty cool.
Right. Wow. Yeah. You've done a lot of work within sport and climate change, and particularly football, over the past few years. And yeah, you've been a research fellow here at the University of Brighton, working with Mark Deutsch. So we've thankfully been colleagues for a little while. How have you seen since 2018? You said, the context in the UK is different than the messaging is different than in Germany. How have you seen this messaging about climate change and its intersections with football, I guess, evolve over the years, and sort of how has it changed in the UK and in Germany, or how you're seeing it more broadly?
I mean, I've been, I think, more closely looking into that. Was it November 2020 or something like that? So, well, maybe before I should briefly mention that some of the stuff that I came across and that I will also talk about now, it's not necessarily best practice examples, but maybe we have time to go into that later. But I mean, I don't know whether it really has changed or whether it's just becoming more and more a thing to talk about, right? Environmental sustainability in football. And there's more and more organizations, stakeholders, initiatives taking that on now. But I think there is so much going on. There's clubs offering their fans to combine the purchase of stadium ticket with a voluntary donation to an offset project, with offsetting being an issue in its own. But the Bundesliga in Germany aiming to become the first carbon neutral league in the world by including environmental sustainability into their licensing program, however that will look like. FIFA is talking about the first ever carbon neutral World Cup in Qatar, UEFA claiming to be environmentally conscious while organizing the Euros. There's organizations like Sports Positive that rank football clubs according to their environmental commitment. There's whole football clubs, like, for example, one in the US called Vermont Green FC, that are founded with climate justice as a core principle. Then there's other clubs like, for example, Forest Green Rovers in the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, they are recognized by the United Nations, I think, to be the greenest club, which I also think comes with some responsibility. There's just so much going on. There's fan groups campaigning around it. There's Huddersfield Town Supporters Association, for example, who came up with a sustainable stadium campaign. There's the Football Supporters Association in the UK, partnering now with an organization called Pledge Ball, trying to implement environmental sustainability into their work. In Germany, we have Zukunft Profi Fußball, who put a lot of pressure on football governing bodies to make football more sustainable in all three pillars, social, environmental, and economic. There's ultra groups mobilizing and offering support during the big floods last year in Germany. I don't know whether it really has changed or whether it just has become more. But I think what's important to stress here is that with football having such a huge reach, right, uniting, being one of the few occasions still where so many people unite from the most diverse backgrounds, including parts of the society that are not necessarily engaged on climate yet. I do think this comes with responsibility as well, especially with the responsibility of, integrating the existing research that is already out there, particularly on climate change communication, into the messaging that stakeholders use. And I think that's not necessarily what is always happening.
So right.
While it is true that there's not so much research out there focusing specifically on communicating climate change through football or mobilizing stakeholders or fans to engage on climate, there is still a lot of knowledge and expertise out there with regards to communicating climate change to existing communities, motivate them to do something about it that is also applicable in the context of football as well. So, to quote David Goldblatt, who wrote an excellent report on how climate change impacts football, and the other way around, we're literally playing against the clock right now. So I do think that football and also the broader sport community, they should avoid making similar mistakes as other sectors did and really rely on organizations like for example, Climate Outreach, who have years of experience and provide plenty of open source material on their website. Yeah, to really make sure we use the time that we still have if the interest really is in genuinely tackle climate change.
Right. Yeah. So there's almost a sort of a bit of a disconnect that you're pointing out between, you know, climate communication and really good research and resources around mobilizing communities about climate change, and then football fans and not quite being able to marry the two up yet and sort of connect them in the broader sphere. And you provided some examples for Green Rovers, but you know, it's not the first thing you see on the major news, sporting news websites or the major news websites is the climate plan and an activist and justice plan of these sporting clubs. You see the scores of the matches, right?
Absolutely. I mean, maybe that's going to change soon, but who knows? But even if you see, like, I don't know, for example, pitch side advertising hoardings, right? Just previously, Forest Green Rovers displayed like real-time facts and figures about the climate emergency there. And yeah, I know it is important to do that, but also in the past, doom and gloom hasn't necessarily been shown to be the way to go and the way to engage a lot of people. So it might work with this specific fan base that we're talking about there, but also being a role model for other clubs that might try to do more strategies around environmental sustainability. I just think we need to be very careful and also consider the existing research. So we know that doom and gloom and like this whole, like, what, how do you say, like this communication based on disasters, like this negativity, distant impacts and all that, like talking about polar bears and everything. I mean, it's important to do that, but it really has little effects on people's attitudes. It actually even stops people from taking action.
Right.
So I think one just really needs to be aware of that. And I mean, obviously, football clubs, they are no climate change communication experts and they don't have to be. But then I think it's just important to acknowledge that there is people who are out there. And just because it's football fans, it doesn't mean that the existing research on other parts of society doesn't apply, right? We are all, I mean, I'm a football fan, but I also have other interests and other, I'm also part of this bigger society in a way.
Of course.
So that kind of research, just what I found, can be easily applied to the football context as well.
Yeah, we all have multiple different identities, multiple intersections to our own identities that, you know, they don't necessarily ever have to be separate. We can, you know, we can combine them in new and interesting ways. Support the things that we love and we're passionate about. I guess in this instance, climate change and football, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, football provides other unique opportunities, right? It's, I mean, you have this element of competition where it's just natural to compete against each other. You could use that in the sense of climate change as well, but also this regularity, right? If you use the match day, the fixed match days, or like the fixture calendar. That's the word in English, right? And just
sure, I think so. I'm not
have a good messaging and just remind people, and I don't know, even provide them with constructive guidance of what they could do. For example, just use this regularity and this element of passion of emotions that seems to be a very good way when it comes to mobilizing people around climate change. And that's all elements that football has to offer. Like, we have fans that are really, have a high level of identification and emotional attachment to their team. They come together on a regular basis to support their team. That's things that are really crucial also in terms of, making people carry out changes. There's a lot of untouched potential still there.
Nice. Yeah. And a lot of that untouched potential you highlighted in a recent lecture that you delivered to the Sport and Leisure Cultures Research Group at the University of Brighton, as well as you talk about in your forthcoming publications, one of which I was thankfully got to preview, read ahead of time. I'm just wondering if you could tell us or the listeners a little bit more about what it was that you did in your latest study, who you were working with, and how you worked with these messages of climate change in communication.
I'm trying to answer all those questions, like so many questions in one.
So sorry, I can roll it back.
just remind me in case I miss something. No, but yeah, but I started out doing a research internship with the University of Brighton, and like basically what we did or what I did there is like linking, doing a literature review in both like football fandom research and then link it to the existing research on climate change communication. So that's kind of the background work that I did. And then I was lucky enough to meet Katie Cross, who is the founder of an initiative called Pledge Ball. Okay. And yeah, basically was allowed to, but they for them conducting research right at the beginning of this campaign was super important. So it was just, yeah, kind of a match made in heaven, you could say, that I was able to use Pledge Ball as my case study.
Right.
And I guess you also want to know about Pledge Ball.
What is Pledge Ball? Yep.
So trying to make that short. I mean, back in the days when I started doing research on them, it was, as I always refer to it, basically a one-woman show, right? It was Katie Cross who came up with this idea. Like, she felt in her family, but also in her like friends' networks, like people were just very disencouraged from taking action. Like the whole narrative around climate change is always, I mean, basically we're screwed, right? And there is no way out of it.
Generally, yeah.
Which is also a problem in itself when it comes to talking about that issue. But
certainly,
that's just how that idea came from. Like she was doing some research to also support her family to not feel like that, you know, like there's nothing we can do. And then she shared that information also with her football team that she's playing with. And they came up with a tournament where people didn't have to pay an entry fee, but they actually had to make an environmental pledge, like some behavioral change that they would carry out.
Okay.
was the only way to enter that tournament. And then they basically calculated all that carbon emission savings. Mm-hmm. And then they realized, oh, hold on, when a whole football team is actually carrying out those things, like those smaller individual changes, that is, well, actually becoming quite huge, right? The impact that this can have. So, today Pledge Ball is a UK-based charity that uses exactly this to mobilize the football community to tackle climate change. So it encourages fans, it asks fans to carry out like smaller or bigger pro-environmental behavioral changes. At the moment, I think it's a list of around 65 things that you can do.
Okay. And what are some of those things that you can do? Just off the top of your head.
Yeah. I mean, one that always got some good feedback was reduce your shower time to 5 minutes, especially when it comes to, you know, behavioral change, how to make sure that people really do that, which is quite difficult because, yeah, you cannot just follow people in the shower, right? For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So, and that's also with behavioral changes in general, like it's quite hard to make sure that people actually carry out those changes, but it could be also, I don't know, to use a reusable cup or to use a shampoo bar instead of the, is it liquid-ish?
Yeah, the big shampoo. Plastic bottle shampoos.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. Or then you can do other things like change your energy provider or switch to a green bank, install solar panels. I mean, that's kind of the bigger things that you can do, obviously.
Right.
And you can use public transport instead of your own car or cycle to football matches, for example, sort like things like this. And it's a huge list, but it's also supposed to, yeah, just give you an option, right? It's not like, okay, you have to do exactly that thing. Giving people the option that they can voluntarily choose from it and then do it in support of their favorite club. So
right.
The CO2 emissions pledged to be saved by the fans collectively. And then they are tallied and they decide the club's position in the Pledge Ball league table. So each match day, fans are then asked while their clubs are playing on the pitch to compete each other virtually in this environmental sustainability challenge. And that's kind of how it works.
Oh, great. So it's sort of like a match within a match. You've got your football fans facing off against the other football fans, seeing who can reduce climate the most while their players on the pitch are also, you know, having a match to see who's going to be the winner there.
Exactly. That's how it's supposed, or that, moving forward, how it this should be. Maybe ideally linked to a whole league, right? Yeah. Imagine the Premier League clubs, just all of them doing pledge ball fixtures, and the amount of fans that do stuff there just can get pretty big quite fast. And so even grassroots teams can sign up, right? So in the pledge ball league table, it's possible for a grassroots team to actually be on the top, while clubs like, I don't know, Liverpool or Manchester might not be that high in the pledge ball league. So I mean, that's also cool for me as a Werder Bremen fan, for example, to see that I could compete with bigger clubs or fans from bigger clubs in that league, even though it's not really feasible in, you know, the actual football setting.
Right. Yeah. You've got and with, you know, smaller clubs and larger clubs, you've got anywhere from a couple of hundred to, you know, 60, you know, 1,000 in a stadium at one time, let alone all the additional fans that are out there throughout the world, especially supporting some of these bigger clubs. And that's really interesting that they provide such a really broad range of everything from simple to more complex behavioral changes. You know, that if, you know, you can't afford to put solar panels on your house, but you can make those other small changes. That still seems like a very inclusive model for many of the fans.
Absolutely. And that's what also came back from the interviews that we did. So maybe just going back to the initial question, like, what did I do in my research? Mm-hmm. I did this background research in linking football fandom literature and climate change communication literature. And then I used like the first pilot or the pilot partnership of Pledge Ball with a non-league club in East Brighton called Whitehawk FC to use that as a case, more or less. So linking this written literature and then more or less assessing or trying to understand how football fans actually experience that engagement with Pledge Ball was then part of that research. And which was a bit challenging as well, because I mean, when I started doing this, was it the first, second or third lockdown? I'm not entirely sure. But and I was like studying a master's in Gothenburg in Sweden, doing this internship virtually with the University of Brighton, and then obviously also doing all the interviews and all that on Zoom as well. So I spent a lot of time on Zoom, I think, during that time, but which I thought in the beginning would be super, super boring and difficult and I don't know, but actually it wasn't. Which also had to do with the Whitehawk fans. I mean, I've never met them in like face to face, other than in a Zoom room, but it never felt like that. So like also the club, they tried to stay in touch with their fan base during lockdown. They tried to engage them. They had Zoom quizzes, like so much was going on. That was what I did then. So we had a survey, which we framed as the annual club survey, to just get an understanding of the fan base, to understand where they are at with regards to environmental attitudes and all that. And then starting from there, we had qualitative, or we had, I had, I, like, yep. I had to do qualitative interviews I was lucky enough to do those interviews with the fans and, try to identify the ones who engage with Pledge Ball and talk to them about their experience. And all that was part of the research and informed also the broader research, you could say, and what do we have to do or what do we have to take into consideration when trying to engage football fans or engage them more on climate change, because the gut feeling is also that there is already a lot of football fans that are passionate about both, like football and climate, but probably also go to protests, right, on Fridays for Future Day or school strikes for climate, as it's, I think, the correct term in the UK. So there will be a lot of people who are passionate about like both topics, but they just haven't really considered talking about it on the pitch probably, or demanding more action from their club.
Right.
But yeah, I guess there is the appetite, and it's also, for example, using Pledge Ball to show that appetite of fans for more climate action, for more environmental sustainability, and then yeah, also use that to start having conversations with the club and put some pressure on them to do more, for example.
Yeah.
Did that answer the question?
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, you're right. You still have that. Yeah, maybe in some sectors of sport, you still have that sort of feeling or myth of sport being apolitical, and you know, on the pitch and in sport environments, you shouldn't talk about politics, and it shouldn't be involved. But I think, as we both know, sports is political from the outset.
But also, I mean, with climate change, it's also impacting sports, right? It's not just the political issue. It's just the fact while especially in football, like professional football structures, obviously they also contribute to climate change, but also climate change is having an impact on our sport. So I don't just think it's a political thing to do, but if we really want to continue watching the game or playing our sports, then that's just what we need to take into account as well. Like, for example, I think it was in the 2015 and 16 season in the UK context, like heavy rain saw more than 20 professional fixtures cancelled.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, for example, in 2015, it was also when Carlisle United's stadium, for example, flooded, which actually forced the club out of the stadium for about 7 weeks. And I mentioned earlier this report by David Goldblatt.
Yeah.
And in this report, he actually mentions that of the 92 teams in the Premier League and EFL, I think 1 in 4 can expect partial or total flooding of their stadium on an annual basis by 2050 if the sea level continues to rise like it is right now. And that is just the effect on professional football in the UK, right? So, I mean, yes, sports is not supposed to be political, but I do wonder whether, with regards to that, it is really a political issue, because, I mean, if we want to sustain the game, then we just have to do something and start mobilizing around it. Also, imagine watching a football game in summer. I don't know, in Germany, usual kickoff time is 3:30 p.m., I think, and then 40 degrees Celsius. I think also as a fan, you don't necessarily enjoy that then anymore. And I mean, we already have additional water breaks at games and whatnot. So,
of course.
Yeah. And football fans have shown to, previously in the past, mobilize around issues, well, directly linked or indirectly linked to the game, like, I don't know, the Safe Standing campaign, all the trouble, or like all the discussions around the European Super League. That was, also an interesting thing to do, like tackling racism, homophobia. There have been campaigns around that already. So, I mean, it is political, mm-hmm. or it is whatever you want to call it, but there is areas of political mobilization already in there, and interested fans. And yeah, it's just seems to be a great untapped potential to also do something about climate.
It's, you know, at the end of the day, it's mobilizing and getting people passionate and interested about protecting the things that they love. And if they love sport and they love football, you know, that's from my side of the table, that seems like a no-brainer after you've done the research.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe I should also say, I mean, my research focused on engaging football fans on climate, but yeah, I just want to highlight as well that does not mean that they are the only ones who need to start mobilizing around it, right? So equally, if not even more important, is it's also the club officials and like staff members, players, broadcasters, people in sports more broadly that need to change their thinking and also allow for more structural changes, particularly in the professional sports world and football to come about. So yeah, I just do think that, like, also in politics and also, you know, consumer demand decisions and everything, it's always about demonstrating that there is appetite, that there is a demand, that fans or whatever other stakeholders do care about climate change. And right. I do think that this can then enable those conversations and those decisions that need to take place, obviously, also on this, not higher level, but on this, on this level where decisions on structural changes are made. Mm-hmm. So I think even though it's always, especially in football, it's said that more than 75% of carbon emissions, I think, stem from fan travel. I mean, yes, that is right. But it's also the question, do fans really have the choice? Like, are there other attractive alternatives to, for example, using your own car to get to the stadium, or right. like what are clubs doing or how do they use their power to actually enable a more sustainable match day experience, for example, for fans, right? So yeah, I don't want to say just because I looked into how to engage on fans on climate change that those are the ones who really need to be the first ones to change. So it needs to go hand in hand, I think. But it's just the research that I did was looking into football fans, just because we football fans can do incredible things, I think. But
have the power. Anyway,
absolutely.
So I guess in a lot of your research in this campaign with Pledge Ball, it sort of looks to intersect both fans and the club's values in mobilizing collective behavior and behavior change, as well as messaging within football and climate change, correct?
Yeah, I think so. It really does. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's so simple. No, but I mean, I think it's hard to generalize, but also in that particular context that I was looking at, I mean, I think what is really important when you try to do a campaign that is also targeting fans mm-hmm. is that you're ideally a fan yourself. And right. Pledge Ball is exactly that. It is a fan-led campaign. It's not such top-down strategy forcing something on fans. And I think especially with all the issues fans already face, like when it comes to policing and whatnot, it's always like nobody likes to be told to change, right, in a top-down manner. And so fans don't like that either. We want to be the subjects of this change. Like, we want to drive this change and give the, like, be given that opportunity and not just, here, that's how you can do it, just do it and that's it. And I think that's not just something that is happening in the fan context, but it's in general, I think it's just taking people's agency seriously and not, as I said, not people being objects to change, but they are actively driving change once you acknowledge that people do care and that they just might need this small push. But I think it's also this very personal touch that Pledge Ball has. It can be adapted by individual fan groups. It has been perceived as a fun thing to do as a group collectively.
Right.
It enabled conversations among the fan group. And I think it's also, like, often as a club and also as a fan base, you obtain very close links to the local community. Mm-hmm. And tackling climate change is also about protecting the local environment that you're living in and, making it better or, like, more sustainable for all people to live in there. And that's something that just, is something that, a lot of clubs already do a lot of things on the social side.
Yeah.
Integrating integration programs, inclusion programs, like supporting local food banks, all those kind of things. So, this environmental perspective that is, interlinked with all the social inequalities that we face. I mean, it's not something that happens outside of all those kind of things, but it rather reinforces existing inequalities we have in our society. So doing something about climate will ultimately also benefit other issues that we're facing. And
certainly. Yeah, that's so... It's so great to hear those connections being made, within Pledge Ball and within your own research.
And I think that's also very important, because to me it still feels like it's often for not just clubs or, like, football stakeholders, but it's often a pick and choose. Like we also had conversations recently when other organizations are trying to, yeah, to get funders or to get funders' interest. And then it's like, oh yeah, I mean, female empowerment, we consider really important, but climate change, that's a difficult one or something like this, right? But it's not either or. Like it's always connect or like interlinked in a way. And,
yeah.
And that's something I think we also need to, yeah, stress right more or make more tangible in a way, like this inter like all, for example, also sustainable development goals, they all, I mean, there's individual goals in a way, but mm-hmm. they are all connected. And it's not like, okay, I want to do something on gender equality, but not on climate change or what other thing you can imagine. So it's, I think we need to think more holistically about all that to truly tackle it. Even though it's probably not as easy and it's not so comfortable and it might be difficult and, you know, we all have to get out of our comfort zone to do that. But
precisely.
Yeah. But I mean, that's then again, back to football, right? Having this regularity, like having this constant reminders that you could actually, for example, do some environmental pledges with Pledge Ball or without, yeah, it doesn't matter, but yeah, just being reminded and doing it together with a group of people that you like is super important, I think, as well. Like just having that support, like having conversations, like maybe even talking about challenges that all of us face, right? We're all on this journey towards environmental sustainability together. Like we all face similar challenges or more or less similar challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So there's hardly anyone who can claim to like act perfectly in at all times. It's just the society we live in just makes it almost impossible, I would say. But that's also something that I think moving forward in terms of like communicating climate change or whatever other change we need to tackle or whatever other issue we need to tackle, it's also embracing this and like being authentic about it. Like also with regards to football clubs, like often they have this, okay, professional football structures, they just don't allow us to be a climate hero or whatever. So it's always finding a balance of, you know, saying that climate change is an issue, that mm-hmm. we take it seriously, but also we are somehow forced to, yeah, just be part of those structures that are there. It's hard. And then some clubs even don't want to say something about it because they fear to fall into this hypocrisy discussion and whatnot. But I mean, nobody's perfect,
right?
And I think it's also encouraging to know that we acknowledge that we are not perfect, but still we need to do stuff. And as like the founder of Pledge Ball, she always stresses that it's not about all people doing things perfectly, but it's not about a few doing it perfectly, but mm-hmm. it's about a lot of people doing stuff imperfectly. It's just starting doing things and just realizing, hey, we can have an impact and all that.
Yeah, that's so much more of a positive message that can really, I think, bring people together and bring people on board with Absolutely. This issue to make those, you know, imperfect behavioral changes to collectively work towards good in climate change and mobilize.
And I think what's also important is just to have a visualization of the things that you're actually doing, right? Like
right.
there's hardly, I mean, at least to my knowledge, there's not that many tools or mechanisms that are yet generally used that actually show us people doing individual changes or even as a fan group, the collective changes, like the impact it actually has. Like I mentioned earlier, like the mainstream discussion around climate change is still pretty much, oh shit, like we're screwed. Why should we even bother? Kind of. But I think that's also due to the fact that there is no such measure that actually reflects what kind of action people, but also governments or, yeah, like we all are doing to actually tackle that issue.
Right.
Like, I don't know if we think about the GDP or those usual measurements of success that we use, they don't reflect that. Like
they don't reflect individual small communities. No, yeah,
exactly. And also when we were, but even environmental sustainability is not reflected in there, right?
Yeah.
But that was something that also came back from the interviews that we had, that people really felt, yeah, encouraged. And even the ones who were already quite environmentally aware, they said, well, I didn't know that some behaviors can have such an impact when we do them collectively. And it's just encouraging to know that other funds do care as well. Mm-hmm. It enabled conversations, but it also just, yeah, this league table, like, I mean, whether it's the Pledge Ball league table or whether it's a different mechanism that you use, but I think it's just very crucial to just show people in a tangible way that, like, all the actions that are taking place already and that they are having an impact, because otherwise you're just sitting there and you're like, well, if my neighbor doesn't reduce his meat consumption, why would I, right?
Exactly.
And I think it's about finding solutions to, yeah, to get out of this vicious circle in a way as well.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. So for people listening in, because we've been talking a lot about Pledge Ball, how do people get involved in Pledge Ball? How do they get their clubs involved?
Well, it's basically quite simple. You go to pledgeball.org and then you can check it out. I think at the moment the website is, yeah, being under construction, but the old one's still there. And then, well, I think it's all or most fixtures, from at least in the UK context, so you're the lucky ones, are on there. So every single professional game in the Premier League, EFL, UEFA club competition, UEFA national competitions, and FIFA World Cup is available on the Pledge Ball website. So every fixture that pits fans of different clubs against one another to see who can have the biggest impact.
Fantastic.
But yeah, if you support a grassroots team, mm-hmm. I mean, for example, Whitehawk, I mean, their fixtures, obviously, the pilot club are already on there as well, but you can just reach out and send an email. I think the contact information is on there, but it's probably info@pledgeball.org.
Sure.
And just ask for your team's fixtures to be integrated as well. And then you, yeah, just tell other fans about it and get those pledging in support of your club. It's also, obviously, if you're listening in from other countries, feel free to reach out as well. We're also, like, Pledge Ball has partnered with the organization Spirit of Football that I'm now working with, to, yeah, more or less make that more accessible for people all over the world, so that it's not just in a UK context that you can sign up and do those pledges, but yeah, do it from wherever you are. And yeah,
fantastic. Yeah, and we'll get all that information in the show notes for everybody if they want to go on and sign up their local football club for Pledge Ball. So my next question, which you sort of preempted, what's the current project that you're working on, Jenny?
Yeah, it's a very cool one. I think I remember saying a year ago or something when I first met them that if I had to make up a project myself, it would probably pretty much look like it. And well, obviously I've been continuing to support Pledge Ball because I didn't have a lot of, I didn't know what to expect when I went into the interviews, mm-hmm. but just what the feedback that we got was just so incredible. So I just decided to continue to support Pledge Ball as a research and development consultant. But what I started now, like I think 1st of April, officially to work on is a project called The Ball, or One Ball, One World, One Ball for Global Climate Action. And it's run by an organization called Spirit of Football, and they are based in Germany. And they do a lot of stuff, like internationally, but also nationally, with regards to integrating refugees, with regards to inclusion, working with marginalized communities in Erfurt, which is a city in East Germany, and do all sorts of workshops and, like, a lot of things is going on. But I was hired to work on that particular project where since 2002, I have to start that way, Spirit of Football has kicked the ball, which you can consider football's equivalent to the Olympic torch, mm-hmm. to 5 FIFA World Cups, visiting more than 50 countries en route. Basically bringing people together, inspired by this reach of football, to do both, like education as well as advocacy, to support people in their local setting to stand up for a fair and more inclusive world. And this time, instead of Qatar, for obvious reasons, mm-hmm. Spirit of Football, or we chose to take the ball from London to the Women's World Cup in New Zealand and Australia. And this time it will be about developing and implementing climate action workshops and gather signatures, climate pledges from governing bodies, clubs, players, personalities, fans, participants at workshops across the world. Basically get people to shift their attitudes towards climate and to make this global collective climate action happening. And we also plan to, integrate experiences and stories, solutions, especially of those people who are usually not part of this mainstream discourse around climate change, right. Which is still focused a lot on, Western and science-driven discussions. So, this ball travels more or less across the world, you can say, which we will also have to look into a more sustainable way of traveling to also show that, if there is a wish to be more sustainable, mm-hmm. even for football, you can find a way to realize that. But it's about bringing people together all across the world who are passionate about both like football and the planet. And then, collect those experiences, stories, the knowledge that is out there that is not part of the mainstream discourse, and then also amplify the existing knowledge. And and this resources that we also create will be open sourced as well. And Pledgeball is a partner of that journey too. So we will use the Pledgeball mechanism to actually, gather all these different actions that are taking place all over the world and create a world map where you can see who's already taking action to do exactly this, what I mentioned earlier, like visualizing it to people that there is other people in the football world, but also beyond that, who do care about climate and bring those people together maybe to create a network so that people can support each other and can get that. That's kind of the ideal plan, and we have great partners on board there as well. And I probably need to stop now because I'm always so excited about this project. But it's also you can, I think theball.tv is the website for this. And
fantastic. Yeah, and they've got a lot of really good resources. I've had a look, and they've got some really cool maps from the past World Cups that they've kicked the ball to that shows you directly those sort of networks and those interlinking lines across different geographies to the different World Cups. So, makes that tangible link between local small communities and the international.
And also, as you might have noticed, I like talking about it a lot, so you can always reach out. But the idea is also to conduct research again around this. Like, this project is also like Pledgeball, very much using existing research, like I said earlier, and also make sure that we also acknowledge that like people are disproportionately affected by climate change, but they are also disproportionately contributing to it. So yeah. That's also something that we want to make more visible in a way through using football as this platform to communicate climate change in a more innovative, more tangible way. And so my task there is also to look into the research or to apply the existing research and make sure that this really has a sustainable impact.
Brilliant. That's fantastic. I'm so looking forward to seeing all the work that comes out of this from you, Jenny, from the Spirit of Football, from the Ball Project, and from Pledgeball in the future. I think you started the ball rolling here. There's a lot of weight behind this, and it's going to go really far.
And we're also planning to come to Brighton with the ball. So, You better get ready over there.
Perfect. Will do. Okay. Thanks so much, Jenny, again, for being on the podcast today.
Yeah. Thanks for the time and the invite again. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Transforming Sport. This episode was produced, written, edited, and recorded by me, Sean Heath. Special thanks this week to my guest, Jenny Ammann. You can find more information about her research and the critical work she is undertaking transforming football and mobilizing football fans to make positive impacts on climate change on her Twitter account at HEJ_Jennifer. You can also find links to the projects she is currently involved with in the show notes. This podcast is a production of the Sport and Leisure Cultures Research Group at the University of Brighton. You can tweet at me, at SeanMrHeath, and the show, at SportTransform. If you have episode ideas or want to collaborate on a project, please send us a message there. You can find more information about the research group, past episodes of the show, and links to further information at our podcast home at anchor.fm/transformingsport.